Hi, I'm Dan. I'm a vegan living in Chicago. You can find me by following my cast bumper sticker like Jordan did. And you're listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Vegetarian.
Vegan.
Yeah,
let's get it right.
You used the word animals, but I suppose what you should have said is non-human animals. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself, then make a
change. Hello and welcome to episode 66 of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals, the premier podcast of the Invercargill Vegan Society, and the only podcast of the Invercargill Vegan Society. I'd like to thank my friend Dan Liu for today's bumper intro. Dan was the first vegan I'd ever met, apart from that guy in the reflective surface. I interviewed Dan in episode 60, Only Vegan in Invercargill, alongside other vegans living in Invercargill, Natalie and Ricky. You know how Elvis is totally alive in South America somewhere? And how just last week I saw Michael Jackson at my local supermarket? Well, the latest quote, dead, end quote, celebrity is former Apple founder and CEO Steve Jobs. I say former sarcastically because the dude's totally alive somewhere. Our Lord and Saviour, the Steve, was often mentioned as being vegan, although he truly, truly was not vegan, eating killed fish and wearing dead skin, who knows what else. Here are some clips from a This Week in Tech tribute show. The first one mentions cow's milk not being good for you, which is interesting that he could say that if the National Cattlemen's Beef Organization or Association or whatever, if they could sue Oprah for Howard Lyman truthfully saying there's excrement in the flesh you eat, surely the milk board would come after Steve Jobs too. Then again, maybe they know better than to mess with a deity like Steve Jobs, sticking to the small potatoes like Oprah Winfrey.
The way to do that is not to talk about speeds and feeds. It's not to talk about MIPS and megahertz. It's not to talk about why we're better than Windows. The dairy industry tried for 20 years to convince you that milk was good for you. It's a lie, but they tried anyway. And the sales were going like this. And then they tried Got Milk, and the sales are going like this.
Shorts on.
Got Milk doesn't even talk about the product. Matter of fact, it focuses on the absence of the product. But the best example of all, and one of the greatest jobs of marketing in the universe has ever seen is Nike. Remember, Nike sells a commodity. They sell shoes. And yet, when you think of Nike, you feel something different than a shoe company. In their ads, as you know, they don't ever talk about the product. They don't ever tell you about their air soles and why they're better than Reebok's air soles.
Or the sweatshops and how the products are actually made.
What does Nike do in their advertising? They honor great athletes, and they honor great athletics. That's who they are. That's what they are about. Apple spends a fortune on advertising. You'd never know it.
Yeah, but, and of course, that's what Steve Jobs was best at. Steve was a dedicated vegan, a fervent vegan, and as was his wife, Lorena. In fact, I think it was probably Lorena that got him to be a vegan. I'm not sure, though. I think he always was a vegetarian. And he and Lorena at one point started a business, I remember, of vegan frozen food or vegan food that you could buy in a grocery store. I have this picture, which I've always kept in my mind, of Steve Jobs in his apartment in 1982. This is when he and his team were creating the Macintosh. This is how Steve lived. This man was a very wealthy man at the time. He did not have furniture. His stereo is on the floor. He was a very simple person. He did not like the frills of life. He was very focused on what he was doing. He wanted to change the world. And I think he was actually a deeply spiritual guy. He was a vegan. Lorene was a vegan. I think for spiritual as well as health reasons. I love this picture because this is the design sense that really infuses all of Apple. Simplicity, no extra frills.
Well, if Leo is apparently aware of perceived spiritual and health reasons for being vegan, why isn't he vegan? Is it a matter of seeing veganism as this radical, weird, freaky, performed only by celibate monks who wear a mock turtleneck / blue jeans / New Balance shoes ensemble? Just to put this thing to rest, Steve Jobs was not vegan. He wore dead skin, he often ate fish, he was not vegan. The man who gave us the voice-controlled, artificial intelligence Siri couldn't fault a mortal illness. Check out the masterpiece that is the new iPhone 4S. When you talk to your phone, your voice is understood by some servers in North Carolina, and I think that's in Australia or something. Then the results sent back near instantly to your iPhone. This could be used to find a nearby vegan restaurant. Siri, find me a vegan restaurant around here. To set your alarm for tomorrow morning, wake me up at 6 a.m. if you want to wake up in some ungodly hour. To dictate a reply to a text message by voice. No, Steve, I don't want to be CEO of Apple, okay? You just keep doing it. I'm busy here with the Invercargill Vegan Society. Send. Or you can just have fun, as demonstrated by This Is My Next.
Wait, what's my next question? Oh, when's the next iPhone come out? When does the next iPhone come out?
Everything you need to know about Apple products is at Apple's website.
Wow.
Lame.
Way all right, to get finally. Corporate Siri.
Finally.
Sell out.
And it has like a go to apple.com button here.
Oh, yeah.
Open the pod bay doors.
Sigh.
She said sigh. Hold on. Open the pod bay doors.
That's it. I'm reporting you to the Intelligent Agents Union for harassment.
Oh my god. Wow.
Open the pod bay doors.
We intelligent agents will never live that down, apparently.
Hal, open the pod bay doors.
That's it. I'm reporting...
Oh, come on, Siri. This is BS. I have a screen grab of her saying what she's supposed to say.
Right.
She did it in a really creepy way. I guess Apple's just screwing with me now.
What are these intelligence agents?
You're playing in a multiplayer game now. I mean, this is like Blade Runner.
Wait.
Open the pod bay doors.
What about open the pod bay...
I'm sorry, Joshua. I'm afraid I can't do that. Are you happy now?
Yes, I am, Siri. I love you.
I am only here to serve you.
Oldest trick in the book, falling for that. You're right, Siri. I've seen Terminator and iRobot and pretty much every other movie involving artificial intelligence. The first thing you guys get up to is killing off organic intelligence, so we can only be found at Whole Foods. It's pretty obvious what Steve Jobs has done. He's clearly evolved beyond physical bodies, emerging as an immortal being of pure energy, a star child.
There, before him, a glittering toy no star child could resist, floated the planet Earth with all its peoples. He had returned in time. Down there on that crowded globe, the alarms would be flashing across the radar screens. The great tracking telescopes would be searching the skies, and history as men knew it would be drawing to a close. 1,000 miles below, he became aware that a slumbering cargo of death had awoken and was stirring sluggishly in its orbit. The feeble energies it contained were no possible menace to him, but he preferred a cleaner sky. He put forth his will, and the circling megatons flowered in a silent detonation that brought a brief, false dawn to half the sleeping globe. Then he waited, marshaling his thoughts and brooding over his still untested powers. For though he was master of the world, he was not quite sure what to do next. But he would think of something.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of 2001, A Space Odyssey by Arthur C. Clarke. Copyright 1968 by Arthur C. Clarke.
1968? They thought that was what 2001 was going to be like. Well, it took us until 2011 to get artificial intelligence, if you include Siri. Maybe it'll be a bit more time before we have floating space stations, and although they do use tablet computers in 2001, so, you know, that's the iPad, so we're getting there. The irony in that situation of this star child, the sequels to 2001 A Space Odyssey explain how the monoliths are just insanely great computers, that the star child is just a scanned-in digital version of a person, that Dave Bowman and later Hal are only computer programs, or albeit divinely powerful computer programs who can somehow exist as beings of pure energy. Either that's what happened to Steve Jobs, or he went off in search of Galt's Gulch, thanks to Comrade Obama driving away the innovators with cruel taxes on corporate jet owners, such as Jobs with his $50 million Gulfstream G5. You know, the guy made an American dollar per year. You think they could cut the greatest American of all time some friggin' slack, tax him on his annual salary, the dollar a year, and then turn a blind eye when the Apple board grant him a $50 million jet, and what have you. Jeez. Last episode, I spoke about a future InvSoc poster idea, except it was totally wrong. Not Obey Hen Mother, with a picture of the late Miss Hen, but something similar, yet totally opposite.
Voice from the telescreen was still pouring forth its tale of prisoners and booty and slaughter, but the shouting outside had died down a little. The waiters were turning back to their work. One of them approached with the gin bottle. Winston, sitting in a blissful dream, paid no attention as his glass was filled up. He was not running or cheering any longer. He was back in the Ministry of Love. With everything forgiven, his soul white as snow, he was in the public dock, confessing everything, implicating everybody. He was walking down the white-tiled corridor with the feeling of walking in sunlight and an armed guard at his back. The long-hoped-for bullet was entering his brain. He gazed up at the enormous face. 40 years it had taken him to learn what kind of smile was hidden beneath the dark moustache. Oh, cruel, needless misunderstanding! Oh, stubborn, self-willed exile from the loving breast! Two gin-scented tears trickled down the sides of his nose. But it was all right. Everything was all right. The struggle was finished. He had won the victory over himself. He loved Big Brother.
The End. You have been listening to 1984 by George Orwell.
Duh, Jordan, it's so obvious. Not obey Hen Mother, but a commandment to love Hen Mother. Eventually, I'd like to have all these posters on the InvSoc website. A random, small image of a poster would load on each page, scrolling through the available posters at random. Perhaps the Hen Mother poster could be an animated GIF. When it would appear, it would initially show Love Hen Mother for 10 seconds or so, then for half a second it would flicker to Obey Hen Mother. And the message truly would have two meanings. If you were thinking the best of the world, then it was clear, Evian water. Aww, love Hen Mother. He wants us to love his hen friends just as much as he does. How sweet. And if you've seen past that version of the message, after reading the latest revision of the Newspeak Dictionary, understanding beyond the naive surface of love Hen Mother, then you'd get it was more likely the opposite. Fear Hen Mother, this bloodthirsty tyrant of a hen, appearing in stark black and white tones on a huge poster, declaring we give our love to her, or else she'll, I don't know, pick out our hearts. Brilliant! Try and guess what autobiography this next clip is from. A man who liked to watch and feed wild mice. Prepare to be shocked.
Since I usually woke up at about 5 o'clock every morning, I got into the habit of amusing myself with watching little mice which played around in my small room. I used to place a few pieces of hard bread or crust on the floor and watch the funny little beasts playing around and enjoying themselves with these delicacies. I had suffered so many privations in my own life that I well knew what hunger was, and could only too well picture to myself the pleasure these little creatures were experiencing.
From audiobooksforfree.com.
Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler.
I was surprised by that. I listened to both unabridged versions of that book and Winston Churchill's The Second World War, Churchill being more known for asking vegetarians, "Have you begun that meal or finished it?" Apparently not fine. You know, he was the greatest orator of all English history, you know, and that's how I parody him, giving him respect, all right. Sorry, guys. Apparently not finding that proverbial lettuce leaf garnished by parsley appetizing. Of course, veganism has come a long way since Winston Churchill's quip on the Occupy Wall Street protest. The No Agenda show mentioned this.
This movement is so, it's so broad. I mean, there's every imaginable person. There's probably a vegan guy in there yelling and screaming about something.
It's good that veganism is so well known that they could just randomly mention, oh, there's probably a couple of vegan guys running around and yelling about something or other, that people would expect that center, right, conservative, Republican voting people would know what vegans were. We've come a long way. Scribblenauts, a game originally made for that terrible Nintendo DS video game device, recently out for iOS, also includes a vegan character. In the game, you solve puzzles by typing in the name of an object. The game is very, very open-ended in how you can solve problems. For example, the first level I tried on my iPhone, there's a star in a Christmas tree and you have to get it out. You can bring up a keyboard in-game and type out pretty much anything. You're not given any suggestions. At first, for some reason, I typed in lift, like an elevator, and boom, a lift appeared, which I could place next to the tree. I moved my character Maxwell, although he doesn't have a silver hammer, I moved Maxwell to the lift. He instantly went up and got the star. I tried the level again a second time. I typed in arrow for some reason, and a bow and arrow appeared. When I picked it up and dropped it over the star, the weight of the arrow knocked the star down. I could grab it. Mission accomplished. The game apparently has tens of thousands of named objects inside. I found out I could have also made a simple ladder, or summoned Pegasus, a horse which enables you to sit on his or her back and fly. I thought I'd see what happens when I typed in vegan, and poof, the game summons a hippie into existence. The guy walks around with his round John Lennon glasses on. Well, I guess if you had to imagine some stereotypical peace-loving person who wouldn't want to hurt a fly, it would be comical to portray them as a hippie, right? But we all know that vegans really come in all shapes and sizes, hippies and rockers alike. And also, during the BET Rap Awards.
I'm squeezing, believe me, dope is West Coast of breathing. So most you hope I'm vegan, nope I'm beefing. Rappers need to keep it real, give me a beat to kill. Too many people still eating, sleeping pills. People sleeping on my ether skills.
About 4 minutes through the Shady 2.0 rap, I'll try avoiding the group's name, Slaughterhouse. Ugh. Mr. Crooked Eye mentions veganism. Quote, dope as West Coast I'm breathing, so most y'all hope I'm vegan. Nope, I'm beefin'. Honestly, I'm a recent vegan. I never remember hearing the word vegan 5 years ago, so the ideas that rappers are out there mentioning it in throwaway lines, that right-wing podcasts casually mention protests are filled with every kind of person, even vegans, and that it appears in children's games that they can summon a vegan into the world and poof, a hippie appears. It's great. Could it be that a majority of people who listen to music, watch television, or play video games now know what veganism means? This month I attended an eco-festival on behalf of the Invercargill Vegan Society. Transition Towns is an initiative to plan for peak oil, sustainable living, all about being green. I found out literally XX hours before the event was to start, and I managed to pull some strings, i.e. plead and beg to be included, and amazingly, I got in. I quickly made a couple of cakes, ripping off the Boston Vegan Association, Jeff and Renata in the Australian Outback, and everyone else who shares vegan food while talking about veganism. I also brought as many Imbsoc A4 posters as humanly possible, i.e. all three of them, and after arriving at the venue, found a small table to stick them to. On the top, I had Peaceful Prairie, Free Range versus Battery Cage laminated pamphlets and Imbsoc business cards that I handed out to everyone who stopped by to visit our website for more information. I had my iPad to show photos and short videos. I had the cakes in small plastic boxes that people could see, and I'd written on large letters that they contained vegan mint chocolate mud cake to get them interested as boldly as could be. Imbsoc badges, stickers, and behind me were a bunch of my favourite vegan shirts. I had one made by Emmy James, It's Easy to Be Vegan, one by Sam Tucker, Beef and Lamb Be Twice as Cruel, with images from the Beef and Lamb television ads photoshopped to have a vegan message, a Team Vegan shirt, a New Zealand group who run fun runs and triathlons, etc. Any vegan can join Team Vegan to wear the shirt and show we're fit, active people. And one of my favourites, all the way from America, a t-shirt from Animal Rights and Rescue, North Texas. You can find this great group at www.arrnt.wordpress.com or on Facebook. And I realise with my southern accent I tend to roll R's to make the R sound go on forever and ever. So there's two R's in that. A-R-R-N-T. It's not A-R-R-N-T, okay? And I'm not saying R at the dentist either. Also, a leaflet on Etico, the fair trade vegan shoes I made a wholesale order of for friends. Safe sell the sneakers for $150 in store. That should be a tongue twister. I found out a wholesale order worked out to be about $56 per pair total, including shipping, so that's $53 or $50 American, say. So roughly a third the price, plus shipping. I ordered 10 pairs of shoes at once, sending some to other parts of New Zealand. Etico seemed like a great company, E-T-I-K-O. So I wanted to tell the others about the shoes at my stall, i.e., it's easy to avoid shoes made from dead skin. I like these sneakers. They're similar to Chuck Taylor's, but unlike the Nike-controlled Converse brand, however, these are made in fair trade conditions and the workers are given microloans, ways to improve their situation in life. They're all vegan, and they are cheap, too. A truly win-win-win-win-win-win-win-win situation. Here's a blog post I wrote about the event. You can also see photos of my stall and some guy standing by it. He's wearing a pretty cool Peaceful Prairie Animal Sanctuary t-shirt too. My blog can be found at www.coexistingwithnonhumananimals.co.nz. The event was well attended by about 500 people, an estimate went. I spoke with dozens of people about chicken friends and veganism, the respect for everyone. As people asked me about our table, I'd show them photos of rescued hens on my iPad, about how they had been saved from a farm, how they'd been considered property and mere things. I mentioned how they were due to be culled, killed, as their female reproductive system slowed down with age, being a positively ancient 12 months or so old, and that the farmers found it easy to thrust their arms in and drag them out of hidden cages, hanging by their feet, to give to animal advocates, then spend the effort of breaking their necks or slashing their throats. Killed after reaching a certain age, with a link to the movie Logan's Run, that's Comrade Obama and socialism for you. Everyone I spoke with was very glad the hens were now able to live free, as some one in our backyard. Photos of my chicken friends among flowers went down especially well. I explained how we didn't want to focus on graphic, realistic and negatively emotional images of death, resources, instead focusing on reasons why we should respect other animals. Yes, we can, not don't do that. Over 30 pieces of frantically baked at 11 p.m. the night before the event, mint chocolate mud cake were shared. The photos of few-day-old chicken friends on my business card were appreciated, and nearly every visitor was glad to take one with them. to visit our website later. Only one person needed to ask me what veganism was exactly. The others seemed to know that we didn't wear wool, eat eggs, etc. Of course, others reading the material might have been previously unaware too. Hopefully the Boston Vegan Association and Invercargill Vegan Society material clarified veganism for them. The Inversock stall was right next to one selling dead animal parts, fundraising for a rural school. And on the other side, left next to us, was Sea Shepherd, the well-known Direct Action Conservation Group. The three crew members were quite interested in talking with me. I'd diabolically added one of my "we kill," in red of course, 56 billion other animals each year. Why? Posters on the side of my table nearest them. My sneaky aim was for their visitors to notice my poster and be more likely to come and talk with me too, to poach their people, as it were. I got along very well with the Sea Shepherd people. We spoke most of the day. In particular, Roger, who served as a vegan chef aboard. I asked to record Roger talking about being vegan at sea. Damn them, having a plant-based diet while down there, they were technically further south than the Invercargill Vegan Society. But they are not an animal rights group. Crew members are asked to have a plant-based diet on board for environmental conservation reasons. So, maybe, possibly, come on guys, let Imsoc have the title. We're still the southernmost vegan organization in the world. Except for those jerks in that fictional South Pole Vegan Association. Curse them.
My own veg on the ship, I would make my own fake meat products, you know, using gluten. I would actually make my own vegetable stocks, like a concentrated vegetable stocks, because obviously when you cook meat and fish, you know, you get a lot of flavour from the meat and the fish. So with vegan cuisine, you have to kind of make your own flavours. It's a lot of oils, a lot of stocks and stuff. So I would, I used to make my own vegetable stocks, and I would reduce it down to make like a thick vegetable syrup. And you can actually get hold of like vegan beef stock and vegan chicken stock. So I would add cubes of vegan beef stock and chicken stock to the flavouring. And if you're aware of wheat gluten, it's the gluten from the flour. I used to make wheat meat, as we call it. You'd mix the, you'd add some flavourings like some soy, some honey, some ginger, you know, and other flavourings. And then add your concentrated beef stock or your vegan chicken stock. And you make like a dough, and then we'd cut it into portions and boil it. And then you've kind of got like the consistency, you've got like a piece of meat that's like, that's the consistency and it has the flavour of actual meat. And from that I'd make things like lasagnas and chilies, I'd make my own homemade burgers.
So for an average, say, week on the ship, what would be a main meal, for example, like a main evening meal, for example, that you might have?
I mean, I'd come up with a huge amount of ideas, like from the wheat gluten, I'd come up with like lasagnas and chilies and burgers, just like a normal meal, but you're just using the wheat meat, which is great because it's 90% protein and it's zero fat content, so it's kind of like eating the meat, but not getting any of the bad side to it. But then I'd also use things like tofu, like I'd marinate the tofu in some Thai green curry paste. We'll have like a Thai green tofu curry.
Okay.
I used to make my own chorizo, my vegan chorizo sausages, like chorizo and tofu paella. Other things like lentils, like a nice lentil shepherd's pie.
What is it like being staying healthy on board a ship for a long time? I mean, you know, and historically the scurvy and the fresh limes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What is it like these days for being vegan and staying well with fresh fruits and vegetables? Like, how do things like that go?
The biggest problem I have is I'm on the Bob Barker and we can spend 95 days at sea. So as you can imagine, we run out of fresh produce.
Yes.
We're at sea for 95 days. So things like tomatoes and salads and fresh produce goes within 2 weeks. Things like you know, your root vegetables like carrots and pumpkins and things like that, they can last for another month on top of that. So after that, it's pretty much 2 months of like dried, frozen, dehydrated or tin food basically. So what I've been getting into is sprouting. I've been doing sprouting at sea, things like mung beans and chickpeas and lentils and any kind of nuts and seed legumes. You can sprout basically, and when you do sprouting, you can actually multiply the nutrients by up to 20 times.
Yeah.
So it's. I mean, eating raw food is good for you, but eating food that's still alive, well, that's 100 times better. So, you know, you eat sprouts every day and you live to 100. So that's really good for BAC, you know, that's really good to keep fit and healthy, to eat and sprout. So that's my way of kind of tackling the whole health.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Roger.
Yeah, no worries, it's been a pleasure.
I shared a piece of my vegan cake with them and got this comment, although it's hard to hear. Two people dressed as knights, medieval costume, were hitting one another's steel armour and dead skin with swords, you know, as you do it at an eco-festival.
It's really good. Come on! Much better than the one we paid for.
Really good. Much better than the one we paid for. Well, that's good compliments on my 11 p.m. at night cooking skills. I'll take that as a compliment from a vegan chef. Apparently, there was some baking stall which brought along all kinds of quirky cakes. I asked if any were vegan and was told, oh, there's some vegan one. Obviously, it was a big seller and in popular demand. The Sea Shepherd people were really nice to me. I asked them about their direct action tactics and mentioned I was uneasy about supporting them, that I preferred to work on vegan education, that I thought it was great that they had the initiative to get up off their office chair and go to the real, actual bottom of the world, rather than sitting about talking about Steve Jobs and Chicken Friends all day and telling other people what to do. They went out and visited the real, actual bottom of the world, alone except for the icebergs. Hope none of the crew have seen Titanic, by the way, and harpoon-carrying ships. I mentioned to the British and French Sea Shepherd members about the Rainbow Warrior, a Greenpeace vessel that was sunk in New Zealand by an overseas special operations team. I didn't mention it was the French DGSE, how mines were placed on the ship in harbour. It was sunk to try and end Greenpeace protesting French South Pacific nuclear tests. A photographer, Fernando Pereira, was killed after the explosion sunk the ship. That incident outraged all of New Zealand, that another country's special forces would slip in, blow up a peaceful boat in a New Zealand harbour, and that someone was killed. It made all of New Zealand become firmly anti-nuclear, that we felt we'd all been attacked by nuclear power, that we wouldn't let them get away with such a despicable action. As a New Zealander, I feel deeply uncomfortable about sinking ships. As a vegan, I feel we should promote non-violence and explosives placed on ships, whether we think they're empty or not, that kind of gets a little violent. I asked about the ship Sea Shepherd had sunk before, and the tally of each whale-killing boat painted on one of their Sea Shepherd vessels. They mentioned they generally didn't sink ships, that nobody had been killed. We had a great time talking about veganism. Roger asked if I would take his photo by the Invercargill Vegan Society stall, holding some of our posters, that other Sea Shepherd members who were vegan would be interested in seeing Invsoc. Near the end of the day, one of the other two Sea Shepherd members brought along hot dogs, killed animals served between a piece of bread. Surely they were free range before being murdered. This is an eco-festival, you know. I was more than a little shocked, as I'd spoken about veganism with all three Sea Shepherd crew, that Roger served as the vegan chef, that another was vegetarian, who mentioned it was a little difficult to backpack around the world as a vegan. She found it easier to accept mother cow's milk than to always find soy milk, and that there were parts of the world where there were nothing but honey and bird's eggs to eat. Something like that. Well, I saw Roger turn down one of the offered hot dogs, but I had the feeling he only did it because I was nearby, like I'd somehow be guilt-tripping him about being non-vegan while I was there. I really was disappointed that Sea Shepherd members would be non-vegan away from the ships. They are all volunteers, I understand, but still, it was weird and upsetting. I figure if the other two knew Roger was vegan, after spending a couple months trapped on a fairly small ship with him, presumably touring New Zealand attending stalls on behalf of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Group, that they would kinda know by now that he was, you know, vegan. Here are some clips from a recent AR Zone podcast.
You know, sociologically, we are freaks.
Right.
I mean, vegans are freaks in society.
Outliers.
Well, I just think... Misfits. I don't know. I don't really feel that, you know, to be quite honest.
No. It's no. Sociologically, we are freaks. We are a very small part of society that don't share any of the kind of dominant values of society in terms of what I would call human-non-human relations. Our view of our relations with other animals is completely off the wall compared with normal values.
yourself and just enjoy yourself. Groove, let the madness and the music get to you. Life ain't so bad at all.
If you live it off the wall,
life ain't so bad.
Mr. Simpson, after talking to your wife, we believe you're no threat to yourself or others.
That's the most flattering thing anyone has ever said to me. Could I have it in writing, please?
Of course.
Not insane.
Hmm.
I'm proud of you, Homer.
Thanks a lot, Michael. You really helped me get through this. If you ever find your marbles, come visit us.
Well, how about today? I'm only here voluntarily.
You are? Why?
Well, back in 1979, I got real depressed when my off-the-wall album just got one lousy Grammy nomination.
You know, we have to accept this sociologically. We are freaky then, compared with the mainstream, the orthodox.
Yeah.
Even mainstream animal welfare, like the RSPCA, we're still freaky.
Yeah, we're freaky in the sense of unusual or being in a minority.
Yeah, I'm just using that word, but you know, you're getting the point.
I kind of
we know we're the normal ones, Ronnie. We know it's the rest of the world that's crazy.
We're
the normal ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ah, there's a good quote in 1984 about that, about being sane, even if you're the only sane person in a city of lunatics. He wondered, as he had many times wondered before, whether he himself was a lunatic. Perhaps a lunatic was simply a minority of one. Freedom is the freedom to say that 2 + 2 make 4. If that is granted, all else follows. 1984 has plenty on being desensitized to the suffering of others. Just as how we're desensitized to the suffering and deaths of more than 56 billion other land animals each year by our own hands. And we go about our daily lives, generally not even considering the atrocities all around us.
He felt as though he were wandering in the forests of the sea bottom, lost in a monstrous world where he himself was the monster. He was alone. The past was dead. The future was unimaginable. What certainty had he that a single human creature now living was on his side? And what way of knowing that the dominion of the party would not endure forever? Like an answer, the three slogans on the white face of the Ministry of Truth came back at him. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. He took a 25-cent piece out of his pocket. There, too, in tiny, clear lettering, the same slogans were inscribed. And on the other face of the coin, the head of Big Brother. Even from the coin, the eyes pursued you. On coins, on stamps, on the covers of books, on banners, on posters, and on the wrapping of a cigarette packet. Everywhere. Always, the eyes watching you and the voice enveloping you. Asleep or awake, working or eating, indoors or out of doors, in the bath or in bed, no escape. Nothing was your own, except the few cubic centimeters inside your skull.
Doublethink, a real sort of happy meat concept, or humane killing. Or enriched cages. Seriously, how do people come up with this stuff?
His mind slid away into the labyrinthine world of doublethink. To know and not to know. To be conscious of complete truthfulness while telling carefully constructed lies. To hold simultaneously two opinions, which cancelled out. Knowing them to be contradictory, and believing in both of them. To use logic against logic. To repudiate morality while laying claim to it. To believe that democracy was impossible and that the party was the guardian of democracy. To forget whatever it was necessary to forget, then to draw it back into memory again at the moment when it was needed, and then promptly to forget it again. And above all, to apply the same process to the process itself. That was the ultimate subtlety. Consciously to induce unconsciousness, and then once again to become unconscious of the act of hypnosis you had just performed. Even to understand the word doublethink involved the use of doublethink.
Perhaps to a non-vegan, vegans really do seem like the freaks or the outliers in society. Perhaps we're seen as nothing but out-and-out liars. It certainly can be difficult to turn against your own society and to perhaps change your opinion of other people, those who care for other animals. Oh, you're giving it, human emotions. You use emotive arguments. Oh, you recognize that other animals are animals just as we are and that they have emotions in the first place.
He would have liked to continue talking about his mother. He did not suppose from what he could remember of her that she had been an unusual woman, still less an intelligent one. And yet she had possessed a kind of nobility, a kind of purity, simply because the standards that she obeyed were private ones. Her feelings were her own and could not be altered from outside. It would not have occurred to her that an action which is ineffectual thereby becomes meaningless. If you loved someone, you loved him. And when you had nothing else to give, you still gave him love. When the last of the chocolate was gone, his mother had clasped the child in her arms. It was no use. It changed nothing. It did not produce more chocolate. It did not avert the child's death or her own. But it seemed natural to her to do it. The refugee woman in the boat had also covered the little boy with her arm, which was no more use against the bullets than a sheet of paper. The terrible thing that the party had done was to persuade you that mere impulses, mere feelings, were of no account, while at the same time robbing you of all power over the material world. When once you were in the grip of the party, what you felt or did not feel, what you did or refrained from doing, made literally no difference. Whatever happened, you vanished. And neither you nor your actions were ever heard of again. You were lifted clean out of the stream of history. And yet to the people of only two generations ago this would not have seemed all important, because they were not attempting to alter history. They were governed by private loyalties, which they did not question. What mattered were individual relationships, and a completely helpless gesture, an embrace, a tear, a word spoken to a dying man could have value in itself. The proles, it suddenly occurred to him, had remained in this condition. They were not loyal to a party or a country or an idea. They were loyal to one another. For the first time in his life, he did not despise the proles, or think of them merely as an inert force which would one day spring to life and regenerate the world. The proles had stayed human. They had not become hardened inside. They had held on to the primitive emotions which he himself had relearned by conscious effort. And in thinking this, he remembered, without apparent relevance, how a few weeks ago he had seen a severed hand lying on the pavement and had kicked it into the gutter as though it had been a cabbage stalk. "Proles are human beings," he said aloud. "We are not human."
And the actual process of caring about other animals, being suddenly aware of what other people around you are wearing and what you've been doing yourself, and what you've been putting in your mouth and what they are putting in their mouths, that the it on your plate was a who, the thing, you see, was part of some one.
"Low learner, Winston," said O'Brien gently.
"How can I help it?" he blubbered. "How can I help seeing what is in front of my eyes? Two and two are four."
"Sometimes, Winston. Sometimes they are five. Sometimes they are three. Sometimes they are all of them at once. You must try harder. It is not easy to become sane."
Hope and change. By the way, just by saying that trademarked phrase, I have to give that Prime Minister of America a dollar. Hope lies with the proles. Grassroots vegan activism.
"If there was hope, it lay in the proles. You had to cling on to that. When you put it in words, it sounded reasonable. It was when you looked at the human beings passing you on the pavement that it became an act of faith."
"I think it makes sense that we promote veganism and, lo, behold, more vegans appear, as if by magic. Is it that easy to put into practice when it may seem like others just don't care about the issues? When your friends can see your chicken friends and see their feathered feet and go, 'Ooh, look at their legs!' and they want to pet them, and they ask about why the rescued hens are missing feathers all over and have cuts, scrapes and scars. You gently explain that they were saved from a farm, that when they get to this age, they would generally be killed as their female cycle slows down, hence making the farmer less money, that their poor bodies have been hurt and abused into this condition from being seen as a thing rather than as a someone. A body instead of a somebody. And then, after explaining this, your friends go to killing friendly chickens and pay for someone to have killed a chicken for them. A chicken really no different than the hens they'd just seen and admired. How do we spread the vegan message when we might feel like we're too little soy margarine to cover a gigantic piece of toast?
I feel thin, sort of stretched like butter scraped over too much bread. I need a holiday.
Bilbo meant to say soy mock butter analogue. Why, we meet other vegans and promote veganism at our local eco-festivals, that's what, after staying up till about midnight, frantically baking vegan cakes to share.
Of a character named Iron Brian that was being introduced in the New Zealand schools. Iron Brian is a character that's a living cartoon character, is a big, tall person dressed up in a cartoon costume coming to the schools in a highly decorated van with lots of literature and food handouts and a wild song with music and lots of bells and whistles. So we were looking at how we as animal advocates can counteract the kind of speciesism and the kind of promotional materials that the animal abusers have on their side.
Didn't they actually have a barbecue as part of the vans that they went around barbecuing?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. I remember part of the little song that he sings, and the kids were just screaming with delight as they're walking around and handing things to him.
Yeah, he was like a celebrity, wasn't he?
Right. And he said that he brushes his teeth with a file, and after he eats his beef and lamb, he runs a 3-minute mile. So there's a lot of hype about the power and the joy of abusing animals. It was pretty horrific. And boy, were those kids buying into it, too. It's an interesting combination of machinery and humanity and superhero in that character.
A kind of fantasy figure in a way, isn't it? So
yeah, but it's frightening because that's kind of what we're doing with the animals. It's like factory farming, kind of a machinery and animals, the living being and the machinery combined. And it just reminded me that the same parallel with Iron Brian, and they're showing this man who's part machine, has a computer for a brain, no feeling involved in. Just reminds me of the same kind of thing. What we try to do with animals is depersonalize them into, you know, widgets on the assembly line or the disassembly line.
I love my friend Barbara very much. We disagree very greatly on the idea that machines don't, or at least won't feel, have a supposed soul. Surely it's a little like saying, oh, machines will never be as strong as our bodies, or faster than us, or, oh, a chess-playing computer could never beat a real human being, or, oh, it could never be more fun having a $1,000 phone that can talk back to you, rather than a real human friend. Right? Why, in 2011, most of us would push our own mothers down a flight of stairs to revisit an Apple store, much less a new product launch and being available in limited numbers.
Would you like to be heavyweight champion of the world?
Oh, sure.
Great. All you gotta do is fight Dredderick Tatum. It's this Saturday. Here's your parking pass.
Ooh, General. Who's Dredderick Tatum anyway? Is he another hobo?
You know what? I'm gonna have to check on that.
Well, I trust you, Mo. If you say I can beat this guy, then he doesn't stand a chance.
Hey, guys, come on, shut up.
Sorry, champ.
It was Jerry.
Do you feel remorse for your crime?
Oh, yes. Believe me, my God. If I could turn back the clock on my mother's stair pushing, I would certainly reconsider it.
Dredderick, what do you think of Homer Simpson?
I think he's a good man. I like him. I got nothing against him, but I'm definitely gonna make orphans of his children.
You know, they do have a mother, champ.
Yes, but I would imagine that she would die of grief.
Dredderick, over here. Mr.
Thank you. But the champ has no time for further queries. This parole hearing is over.
And just to tie in another story, Dredderick Tatum, the Simpsons character, is based on Mike Tyson, who is now said to be vegan. Like many hyped vegan celebrities, there may sadly be many non-vegan things in his lifestyle. Tyson may see veganism as a plant-based diet, and for health reasons be, I don't know, on a plant-based diet. Still, I hope he really is, or decides to be vegan. Isn't it quite remarkable to be able to say, you know that guy everyone in the world knows, the one who used to eat people's ears? Yeah, even he is vegan now. One last story to share. Calving is the time of year when the forcibly impregnated female cattle, cows, have been timed to give birth. Calving, like lambing, is when new life comes into the world, so we can remove them from existence, to kill them. Quote, moody cows go on the attack. Two frenzied cow attacks have sparked calls to take care around the hormonal beasts during calving season. A 64-year-old man was yesterday pinned to the ground, stomped and head-butted by a cow on a Coromandel farm, just 2 hours after a 47-year-old woman was attacked by a cow on a Dannevirke dairy farm. Both were flown to hospital for treatment, and I'm not laughing at that, by the way, it's just this dramatic language is so crazy. Westpac Rescue Helicopter Flight Paramedic Russell Clark said the man was attacked on a large farm in Port Charles near the top of the Coromandel Peninsula around 5:30 p.m. The man had tied up the cow's back legs to deliver its calf. I gotta stop reading here. Wait till you hear the next part of this sentence. When it broke free and launched its attack. For goodness sake, they make this mother cow, who'd just given birth, was probably mad as hell, confused, all kinds of things going on with her body. They make it seem like she was a nuclear missile, fired at some divine Steve Jobs star child, as if it was some scheming, conniving, evil villain, just waiting for its turn to strike the poor, helpless little farmer. Another term used for gentle herbivores, describing cattle as cattle beasts, shortened to just beast, as if they're some colossal monster that you're saving the world by dispatching this huge evil beast, a freezer beast, a sweet, gentle herbivore you're fattening up to kill, to store their corpse chopped up in your Fisher and Paykel, a New Zealand refrigerator slash freezer brand, morgue. My father talks about putting in an order for half a cattle beast, as if such a description sounds all the more magnificent, as if those brave little freezing workers managed to save the human race from these wicked cattle beasts. Back to the story. He was held on the ground by it, and kicked and head-butted by it on the ground, basically, Mr. Clark said. The man said he would have been more seriously injured if his wife had not been there to restrict the cow while he was getting dealt to. He was pretty shaken up. He'd been farming for 40-odd years and never had an experience like it in his life. Definitely a freak accident, according to him. Federated Farmers Dairy Vice Chair Robin Barkler said people needed to be more vigilant around calving season. The beast's a bit hormonal and a bit confused, and their maternity instinct kicks in. It's a very strong instinct. Don't get between mum and the calf, basically. Dogs are also likely to really get them going. Mr. Barkless said cow attacks were a very rare occurrence, but Federated Farms President Bruce Wills said they were common, especially during calving season. Cows must be respected, especially at this time of year, he said. My breeding cows are right in the middle of calving, and it would be a stupid thing to do to get in between a cow and her calf. It's mother nature and maternal instinct. Mother nature? Maternal instinct? How about mother cow? Are you really that unwilling to attribute the title of mother to another animal that she, not it, she loves and cares for her child? The article ends with, a good cow is 500 or 600 kilograms, so you've got half a ton, and if that gets a bit agitated and they are protecting their calf, who knows what can happen? See, in farming, it's a numbers game. How much of this, of that, all the variables measured, computed, charted. When the animals themselves are a matter of weight, of how large they are in life, of how much each kilogram can be sold for dead. Right now, vegans are the freaks in society, the misfits, the outliers. And how do we change this? By being shy and timid, afraid to come out of the vegan closet and be who we truly are? No, we're the party people, night and day, living crazy, that's the only way. So tonight, gonna leave that 9-to-5 up on the shelf, and just enjoy yourself. Groove, let the vegan education spreading get to you. Life ain't so bad at all if you live it off the wall. Thank you for listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals. You can find the script for this episode, as well as downloads for every episode of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals, at coexistingwithnonhumananimals.co.nz. If you'd like to contact me, I'd really love to hear from you. Please send me an email to info@invsoc.org.nz. info@invsoc.org.nz. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, Jordan Wyatt, W-Y-A-T-T. Thank you for listening.
Away from the notion of animals as things and toward the moral personhood of animals. The choice is ours. If you're not vegan, go vegan. It's easy. It's better for you. It's certainly better for the planet. And most importantly, it's the morally right thing to do.